Yama gehe nea jijina, yina Yualarai Maroori. Hello, my name is Jennison. I'm a Yualarai and Maroori woman, therapist and PhD student. And I want to thank you very much for wanting to know more about the project. This goes for about 20 minutes, roundabout, grab a cup of tea. I'm basically reading word for word from the page that you probably would have got the link off. Indeed. Now, at the end, if you decide that, you know, this research isn't for you, that you don't want to participate directly, still, if you have any thoughts that you'd like to share with me about how I've shared this information, about, you know, the different aspects of the project, I'm really open to it, okay? Now, the thing is to, even though I am both Yualarai and Maroori, the language of this study is Yualarai. And not because there, you know, there's not a lot of texts out there that, you know, that we could have a look at, but it's because I'm not yet fluent in Maroori and I want to actually be part of the research as well. So I would have preferred it to focus on both languages, but this time around, it's just Yualarai. So what is it? This project asks, Yamanda Yane Barayeyu, will you come to the window? And the window is a method that I developed as a counsellor to support people and communities in revisiting historical trauma. Now, in the study, the trauma to be revisited is the ignored and misinterpreted voices of our ancestors when they shared language in historical whitefella research. So where did it start? Well, I started to learn Yualarai and Maroori from old colonial books, you know, like the Yualarai Tribe by Kaylin Le Parker, written around 1905, and recordings collected by Janet Matthews and Corinne Williams at the end of the 20th century. Now, because I didn't live on country, they were pretty much, you know, my learning options. That was until Dubbo TAFE began online classes run by elders Auntie Beth and Uncle John. Now, these yarns gave me a new understanding of the purpose and reason. And purpose and reason, they're two words that Uncle John would never let us forget. But, yeah, the purpose and reason of language and each word within it. Now, after the course is finished, I started two Facebook groups, Du and Mala, to keep in touch with other speakers, and Tinnamburrumba to keep in touch with the Hooper-Johnston connection across the borders. And these relationships reinforced Uncle John's wisdom, and I realised that in the past I'd be learning how to say Yualarai, but not actually how to tell it. Now, when I went back to the books, this new telling had me seeing stories different to the whitefella's published interpretation. For example, some authors had moulded our knowledge into a colonised view, you know, so they'd heard the information, but instead of, you know, clarifying it within the culture that they gathered the information from, you know, they moulded it, you know, into their own version. And I want to give you an example. So 1983, Barlow puts this passage together. Most of the blacks, when asked to express a number beyond three, give the word signifying many, or else they say that's all, no more talk. Yet many of the younger men can count well in English. We had last year on the station a young black fellow who could count a flock of sheep, say 200 to 1200, as they ran through the yard gate. Now, when you hear that, you know, it can appear like our ancestors didn't have the capacity to count, when we know, in fact, that wasn't true, right? The truth was that we had no need, right, for the specific, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 and all that type of thing. But Barlow didn't put that in there. When you hear it, you think, oh, hang on a sec. It's moulded into Barlow's knowledge. Now, that was back in 1893. And research methods and, you know, ways of recording history are much more inclusive, you know, than they are now, right? So cultural knowledge holders, we have more control in the, you know, clarification and publication, particularly in language research. With language, it means that our culture and our purpose are recognised as part of the words. and vice versa. The words are recognised as part of our culture and our purpose. Now, much of this came about because of the courage of past Indigenous researchers who not only acknowledged the absence of the voices, but created new methods to ensure that those voices would be heard. Now, while that change in itself is fantastic, right, it's a great cause for celebration, for me, it's really important that it's not left at that. For me, you know, all unclarified historical research impacts any future study because it constricts the view of the past. Our new knowledge holders, our emerging elders, who now have wider access to the world and less access to community and elder confirmation, you know, they'll find these ancestral voices when they look up historical records, but they'll hear them within the limitations of how they were first collected. So, how can I do it? Well, professionally, I'm a narrative therapist, so I work with clients to break down historical truths that were imposed by others. People like, you know, parents, teachers, government, religion, etc., who had the power of definition in a particular circumstance. And I find that when people seek healing, they come clutching a story that they and others may only have considered from a select viewpoint. Now, I combine these skills with my experiences of yarning and, you know, other Aboriginal ways to expand those viewpoints. And one of the methods I call Yamunda Yane Barayeyu. It's the name of this research. I call it Barayeyu for short. And the approach invites clients to journey through a story from several different vantage points. We basically look through four windows: as it was known, as it was told, as it is known, and as it will be told. And the point is to take back the power and be the one who determines how a story will be told going forward. Barayeyu developed from my initial readings of those colonial texts. Gee, I always find that word really hard to say, texts. I was really frustrated in the limited messages that those books were giving, and I wanted to understand, you know, the many influences and intentions that were at play, you know, at the time. I thought it was a bit of a cop-out just to say, you know, oh, in the 1800s, I were racist. Okay, but why? Why, where, who, how? All those types of things. Barayeyu means window in Yuwalaray. And I named this place of viewing with language to remind myself of the multiple authorities necessary to understand a story. That is that no one view can give a full picture, and each view informs the complete picture. I see it as a window because I don't want to rewrite a story. I don't want to make up a story or forget about one part of the story. I want to see the whole view and all the reasons why it became that way. When we know how something is constructed, we can then deconstruct it. Barayeyu will be the guide to help deconstruct those texts in this study. Is that word again? So our energy is pulled away from defeating the colonial conclusion. We don't need to put our energy into that, right? We all know the answer to that one, right? Let's pull away from going, hey, all this colonial stuff is wrong. Let's push that into the background and go, you know what? So what else was there? What were our ancestors saying? Let's make known what their words were. I don't want to concentrate anymore on how a lot of things were changed and molded. I want to actually see what's underneath that mold, what was changed and why, and what was it our ancestors were actually trying to say and trying to share? What other institutions of knowledge were at play? What needs were being filled by our ancestors to actually share the information in the first place? So who's backing it? Well, Charles Darwin University thought it was a pretty good idea Indeed. So they're the university I'm enrolled with for the PhD. They've been really supportive on my wanting to use our own methods on this project and in accepting that the presentation of data may not follow the normative models of 2024 language collection. There are still some pretty heavy ethics to follow through, though, and for good reason. Our MOBs have been researched to the hilt, you know, for a few centuries. And, you know, we want to make sure that we don't just replace, you know, a colonial limitation with our own limitation. So it's really, really important that, you know, as a group, when we make decisions around, you know, any sort of discoveries, that we're respectful, that we're considering the meaning in the past, you know, the meaning in the present, and the emerging meaning as well. So how's it going to help? Well, on a Yuwalari level, on a community level, you know, the study is going to be set up so that descendants like myself contribute alongside ancestors to explore their material, apply our contexts, and where necessary, retell the stories. I'm interested in what might be shared back to us, what elements of communication worked well, whether Barrier actually helped locate alternative stories, whether the experience, you know, supported people in investigating their own histories and identities, whether we felt it was on our terms. And of course, a little bit, you know, away from that is, could our experience actually support other language groups in similar journeys? On a wider level, I want to add to existing knowledge around the power of Indigenous interpretation of our own historical research. You know, were there different social and material configurations? Were there, you know, different knowledge works at play? Did we make known forgotten or different requirements for authorization and continuation of stories? And, you know, really importantly, can we encourage, you know, can this work encourage future researchers to develop a bit more of a complex perspective on what makes an archive, what makes history an authoritative account? So do I have a plan? Well, got a bit of a rough draft. Yep. So if you come on board, the expected commitment, right, is probably four yarns. And two of them are just you and me, and two of them are with a group. So the first thing, first up, and that's what part of this this talk is about, looking for Yuwalari descendants over the age of 18 who have an understanding of Yuwalari language. And, you know, you don't have to be absolutely fluent, right? We're a group together, right? If we've got different levels, we can certainly, you know, work together to ensure that different people understand. But we need people who have an understanding of the Yuwalari language, and I'm going to invite them to participate. Now, the first yarn after that is going to be an individual one over Zoom or phone to talk about the study, possible dates of availability, you know, and answer any questions, you know, that might come up. Then I'm going to do some formal arrangements. I'm going to look at what specific texts we might look at, whether we'll listen to recordings. You know, from ethics point of view, I've got to do things like informed consent, participant information sheets, dates and times of next yarns, and organise some physical meeting spaces. Yep, that's all on me. The second yarn is a group one. It's all of us coming together and going, okay, so what are we looking for? How can we set up some agreements around, you know, safety, that type of thing, you know, so none of us are going to be traumatised. The third yarn is the actual research. So we're aiming to have everyone in the same group at the same time in the same room. But, of course, depending on this, how those first couple of yarns go and, you know, who's on board, we'll see how that works. And the fourth yarn, either as an individual or in a group, is to check in how the experience was. Now, after that, I'll analyse all the research, and, of course, every participant will have the opportunity to comment on the findings before the research is finalised. And the last bit is putting in that PhD and see how it goes. What could possibly go wrong? A lot of things, unfortunately. the first bit, well, actually, there's pretty much two important bits about, you know, what could go wrong. When we talk about what could go wrong, we're talking about risk, right? The first thing is that staying within our own institutions of knowledge is not only a form of resistance against colonization, but one of the ways in which our knowledge survives. And knowledge is not just language, regardless of the culture that you come from, okay? It is the appropriate sharing practices that are lived between us. It is these practices that may be a challenge for us. It's these practices that are going to require some slow steps. Now, this became visible for me when I accessed Uncle Jimmy Barker's tapes at IATSIS in Canberra. Now, the descriptions included references to hunting and ceremonial rituals. Now, as a Murawari woman, I'm not privy to that stuff. That is the way we share our knowledge, meaning I am excluded. Okay? Not for any horrible reason. It's the way culture was, right? There are certain things that I'm privy to. As a woman, there are certain things, you know, that I'm not privy to. Thing is, though, as an Australian researcher, that's all readily available to me. And I have to say, I spent the next month, you know, navigating through community for guidance. And ultimately, I chose not to access that specific data, right? Not to even look at it. It's really, really significant that as a group, we negotiate gender and generation-based information. Part of our second yarn is going to be around that, around whether or not, you know, we have enough participants that if we come across specific men's or women's or elder business or, you know, other protections that come up, whether we'll split into groups or whether we don't access the information. It's also important that we have, different genders, different identities, different ages, you know, within the group, so we can look at that information. Now, the second important bit is the fact that we don't know what we don't know. We can't foresee how many of us will respond to being exposed to the material or any new findings. The best we can do is, you know, put in some safe spaces, some processes, you know, to keep each other safe from trauma when we're revisiting this stuff. And of course, trusting each other that if someone needs something additional, that it's okay, you know, for them to ask. But of course, those protocols are going to come up. That's why I've got the second yarn there, as a group. So what's the PhD question? The PhD, there's always an official question. So I'll read it to you and then I'll break it down a little bit. So here it is. Are alternative understandings possible when Uwalari descendants deconstruct historical texts? I'm never going to be able to get that word out. Written about their ancestors by non-Indigenous researchers using the Barrier framework. So the first part, are alternative understandings possible? We're looking for the voices of ancestors that were not heard or ignored, right? The stuff that, you know, if it wasn't heard, right, like with the counting, right, we bring that to the surface, or something that was ignored completely. The second bit, when Uwalari descendants deconstruct historical texts. So the research is only going to be done by Uwalari ancestors. Okay, we're going to be doing the work. Third bit, written about their ancestors by non-Indigenous researchers. So the specific, I'm not going to say texts anymore, I'm going to say books. The specific books and recordings that we're looking at are where a non-Indigenous person collected language directly from a Uwalari ancestor or through a Uwalari translator, right? Things like Kay Langlo Parker, when someone went out and actually, you know, collected this information. Indeed. We'll probably have something from the late 1800s and stuff from the late 1900s as well. Now, the last bit, using the Barrier framework. Barrier is going to guide us. It's going to guide us where to look, rather than how to look. So we're going to look at information and go, okay, so How was this known then? What were the influences around it? What do we know more about it now? You know, those types of questions. So what happens now? Well, if you leave at this point, I really, really appreciate your visit. And come back to the webpage anytime to be updated on, you know, how the project is going. If you want to put your name down as a possible participant, or you have some feedback on this page, right, or the project, or what texts to use, protocols, any ideas regarding, you know, how we can go forward, please come back to the webpage and click the survey link. It's pretty short, right? It's got about 7 boxes in there. You don't have to answer every box. It's all on one page. You know, it's the difference in boxes is just, you know, prompts, right, to get you sort of thinking. Now, sharing your thoughts or expressing interest does not bind you to anything. If you do become involved, it'll be on terms that you understand and control. And at any stage of the research, you have the option to say no thanks without explanation and leave it at that. Now, you can contact me by phone, by text, by Marco Polo on 043-555-0084. You can email me at girabiri@proton.me. So that's girabiri@proton.me. Or through Messenger at Jetta Wells. Also, if you're passing through the lands of the Gundungurra, Robertson, we can catch up face to face. And every few months, I make the trek through Tubbaga? Yep. Dubbo, Yualarai, Lightning Ridge, Begamble, Gundawindi, Turrbal, Jagera, Meanjin, Brisbane, Kunja, Cunnamulla, and of course, Murawari throughout that trek. Go Ninda. Thank you so much for listening to me.